Now. Real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Now it's that time of the evening again where we welcome our special guest. My guest tonight has appeared on Fox TV, Talk TV, Newsroom, or Newsmax, The Hill, Sky News Australia. And only recently, by the way, I did see him on something. It could have been Talk TV, actually, where he was talking about the American elections. Adam B. Coleman is an author of Black Victim to Black Victor, op-ed writer, public speaker, host of Breaking Bread, the video series, and also the founder of the Wrong Speak Publishing. His latest book, The Children We Left Behind, How Western Culture Rationalizes Family Separation and Ignores the Pain of Child Neglect, has been released on April 1st. And his first book, by the way, he, as far as I remember, when I heard him, he had planned that only, well, he would have been happy, you know, if only his friends bought it and read it. But it turned out to be a lot more popular than that. And he joins me on the phone. Hi, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I remember hearing you saying that, actually. You were surprised at how well your Black Victim to Black Victor book did, because you were kind of saying you'd be happy enough if it was just your friends looked at it and read it. But it turned out to be a lot more popular than that.
Yeah, you know, life is very unpredictable. You know, I just wanted to express myself, write a book dedicated to my son, and just put it one of those things I did a thing that I said I was going to do.
And where does this go back to? At what point did you decide, I want to write a book? I suppose we've got to go back further and, I suppose, look into your personal story and your personal life. Did you have a good relationship with your parents, for example, yourself? I know you mentioned that maybe not a great relationship with your father, but a good relationship with your mother.
Yeah, for the most part, my relationship with my mother, you know, it's like any other parent relationship. Sometimes you have hurdles, but, you know, my mother was a good mother. She did the best that she could, you know, single mother with two children. You know, the situation with my father, he was married, but to somebody else my entire life. And basically, you know, we never really had a bond. Mm-hmm. So that's basically been like the underlying thing of my life. And working through that, you know, I'm 40 years old now, and taking, I would say, probably the first 30 years of my life to really try to work through that, maybe a little bit longer.
From the title of the book, Black Victim to Black Victor, you get the impression that, I suppose, there's a level of, as you're growing up, it, being a black person, there was a challenge involved in that. And to overcome that for many young black kids in particular, it can be very difficult sometimes, depending on where they live. And I suppose the oppression of where they happen to live. Was that difficult for you, or did you come across hurdles just because you happen to be black?
Well, actually, I face the opposite. You know, most people in the United States, they live in one area. But I lived in four separate states before the age of 18. I lived in rural, urban, and suburban environments. Many of environments where I was one of very few black kids. So my experience being around other people who did not look like me was relatively positive. Very few instances where I felt like it was something negatively racially motivated. So my experience is actually of the opposite. The victimhood aspect, it kind of in the book where I'm kind of highlighting, using race as an example, but I'm saying that victimhood is a mentality. It's how you see things. It's how you perceive things. And you know, if something is happening, you have a choice in your life. You can choose to succumb to it, or you can, you know, proceed forward in your life despite those mm-hmm. hurdles.
And that applies to everything, not just racism, other forms of discrimination as well, for everybody, be it disability or whatever it happens to be, that you can choose, I suppose, to own it rather than choose to be to be the victim. I'm not saying play the victim, but to be the victim. I mean, you talked about as well in one of the interviews I saw you with, you talked about before you wrote the book, that part of the inspiration for that as well, when you mentioned about George Floyd. What was your opinion on what happened in that whole George Floyd situation? I mean, there was a lot of people have a lot of different opinions on what happened. But of course, in America, it was a huge story, absolutely huge, and a part of the Black Lives Matter movement. I mean, what was your opinion, or where did you stand on that?
You know, it's interesting. My issue was never really about George Floyd. It was a reaction to George Floyd. It was watching people who are normally rationally minded acting irrational because of one man's death. You know, I've always just seen his death as, you know, an unfortunate circumstance. There are different people that talk about the fentanyl that's in the system. You know, did that play in part of it, to his death? Obviously, there's a police cam footage that came out later on. So you can see that, you know, the I Can't Breathe started well before he ended up on the ground. You know, so there were a lot of questions surrounding it. But at the end of the day, you know, he is a human being who died. And that I think that's a tragedy.
But you believe it was the aftermath and the reaction of people in the community who went out and destroyed their own communities, which was quite ironic, that they went out and destroyed their own communities.
Yeah, I just think that the reaction was something that affected me more than his actual death. And that's kind of what started having me go down the rabbit hole of if I should even write. I was trying to figure out, am I the only one who feels this way? Like, am I going crazy that all of a sudden being Black in America means that you're automatically in danger, cops going to pull you over and kill you? Like, it just seemed completely irrational.
And that opinion from a Black person is probably an unpopular opinion, isn't it?
In some circles, in other circles, I think people know. That's what I'm saying. There is a cultural victimhood that where you're supposed to say, you know, it's tough out here for us. When really, like, some of those people who say that are the most privileged people in the world.
Yeah. I know, yeah. Somebody like Will Smith saying it, for example. I mean, but what doesn't help, by the way, is when the government of America join in. Now, I know Kamala Harris had her turn at joining in when she wanted to defund the police and all sorts of things. But when you've got, say, the governor of California suggesting that there should be reparation for Black people for something that happened 200 years ago, and we should be handing out $100,000 a year to Black people in California as for part of reparation, they're kind of playing into that whole thing of victimhood, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. And listen, it's not the governor wanting to do it on his by himself. There's a whole apparatus of Black intelligentsia, activists who want this type of stuff. But I always knew that nothing was going to come from it. Nothing will, because no one will ever be satisfied with whatever answer or dollar amount that he says. And whatever dollar amount he comes up with will bankrupt the state.
Yeah, well, so, of course, yeah.
It's never going to happen.
Yeah, well, I would be just regretting that I wasn't Black if I was living there at that stage, if they were handing out that sort of money. The other thing as well, I mean, you set up your own publishing company, Wrong Speak Publishing. And what kind of voices or stories are you kind of most passionate about amplifying? Like for me here on the radio, there's certain types of stuff we love doing. And the same when I do my podcast during the day. So there's certain types of things that I love to do. What is it that you really love to do? What sort of voices do you like to amplify?
Well, Wrong Speak Publishing started off really as a blogging platform. It was a way for me to kind of pay forward and give people an opportunity to be heard. And so the voices I like amplifying are just regular people. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it's like in Ireland, but in the United States, our media is heavily controlled by upper class elitist types.
We're getting there. We're getting there, Adam. Yeah, go on.
And so that is more of a reason why, you know, me writing the book is one thing, but me getting more into writing opinion articles for publications is another thing. And I felt like I should, because everyone who is part of the media sounds incredibly ridiculous. It is not the America that I know that they're trying to paint. So, you know, giving people an opportunity to tell their story on Wrong Speak, you know, has been incredibly humbling and cathartic for just like a regular person who just has a story to tell, and the thanks I get afterwards for allowing us to publish it. So,
I mean, I often talk about America in the sense that we talk about multiculturalism because obviously, with like many countries in Europe at the moment, we have a huge problem with immigration because it's chaotic. Okay, but we talk about America when we talk about the idea of multiculturalism, and there isn't really that many great examples in the world where multiculturalism has worked. But in America, it's different because it started off as a multicultural society. So you've got Hispanics, you've got Black, you've got White, you've got, you know, Native Indian, you've got everybody, Mexicans, you've got everybody all living together in one big melting pot. And I know we hear a lot of bad stuff, but for the most part, it kind of works okay, doesn't it?
Yeah, I would say slow change works well and purposeful immigration works well. So like where I live in my building, you know, it looks like the United Nations, everybody's in here. We all get along just fine. You know, it's the rapid change in immigration where people where maybe the vetting isn't that strong. I always kind of felt like the people who came here from other countries, like I live in an area where there are a lot of Indian Americans. Most of them are like engineers, high earners. They wanted to come here. You know, it's a completely different mindset. They want the American dream. They want to be part of America. They're not looking for handouts. Like, finding a poor Indian person in America is tough. Like, they outpace us. So,
well, they're like the Irish. When the Irish went to America, they didn't get anything. No handouts, no help. You either made it or you went home. So they're still doing it, by the way. So the Irish were reasonably successful. They credit the Irish with building Manhattan, for example, of course, because we're good with our hands. We like to build. So the Irish did well in America too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. Like, I live in the Northeast. There's a lot of people from all over the world, a lot of first, second generation from all over the world. But there's a core American identity that we all sort of buy into. We have a bunch of little subcultures, but at the end of the day, we're uniquely American. If we leave America, and I've done this, I've been throughout Europe, I am an American. I know I stick out as an American. Like, there's no changing that. And I think it's in our blood.
Mm-hmm. And how's America right now at this very moment in time? There's this massive amount of fear from the people on the left who are shaving their heads and all sorts of things because Donald Trump is going to be the president in 2 weeks' time. So, I mean, is that fear irrational by those people? I mean, the man is only in for 4 years. So far, I don't think he's done such a bad job. I mean, he's only in for 4 years. Is it kind of this kind of irrational fear from the left and the Democrats?
You know, it's very interesting because you would think, you know, he won his election that the same level of vitriol from 2016 would pop up, but it's actually not. There seems to be a lot of, this is what it is, and it's going to be all right. There's been a tide. You know, I live in a pretty Democrat stronghold of an area, and I've seen people with Trump hats. I never saw that before.
Yeah, America's gone red. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, there's definitely a vibe change where it's not irrational. You see today, Barack Obama sitting down with Donald Trump, right? There's an understanding. There's more of a taking seriously of Donald Trump. And actually, I would even say Donald Trump seems to be taking his job even more serious than when he first
won in 2016. Yeah. And he's certainly taking a lot more care of who he's putting in his administration, where last time around he was wet behind the ears, so to speak, didn't know. Because I listened to an interview with him and they asked him about his first day as a president. And he said he stood in the Oval Office and said, I'm a president and I have no idea what to do. But this time around, he's now being more careful about who he's hiring, who he's putting in charge of things. He's taking a lot more time to do that. And realistically, the president is not the one that runs the country. It's all the people he hires. They're the people who are running the country, essentially.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'm fortunate enough to know a couple of people that he appointed.
So I know two that he's appointed. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a couple. But I do see there's a changing of the tide. There are people who are kind of waking up, not necessarily to Donald Trump is amazing, but understanding him as a flawed human being, just like we all are.
Your new book, by the way, The Child We Left Behind, How Western Culture Rationalizes Family Separation and Ignores the Pain of Child Neglect. What direction are you going to take that in? Because I'm going to be honest, I haven't looked at the book yet, but I'm assuming, you know, when we talk about Western society and how we're involved in child neglect is we're not as good parents as we used to be. Well, I'm not going to, not for myself, but I know a lot of parents, we're kind of what they call helicopter parents. So we're not really, I mean, all a child ever wants is the love of a parent. That's a child. That's all a child wants. It doesn't want an iPad. It doesn't want a holiday in Vegas. It doesn't want all of those things. It just wants the love of a parent. Are we failing our children now in Western society?
Yes. So there is, you know, statistical, you know, in the United States, about 23% of children are growing up in separate homes from at least one of their parents. So they're living in a single parent home, 23%.
Wow.
Right. And this is this isn't just Black Americans. This is all Americans. It crosses all demographics and even economic classes. The United Kingdom is right behind us. I think it's about 21%. So, you know, this is a Western issue. So we have to ask the question, what exactly is causing this? you know, and what's the repercussions that we'll face. So when I look at the most major of issues, at least in America, you look at violent crime, homelessness, drug addiction, the list goes on. You know, I've talked to people who worked in the juvenile system. They all see the same thing. These are kids who grew up in broken homes. These are kids who are coming from foster care system where no parents are there for them, right? And they're just being thrown around, which I talk a little bit about in the book. But there are severe repercussions for our neglect of children. At some point, they're going to get our attention. They're either going to get our attention when they're in our home and we're raising them, or they're going to get our attention when they break into your house, steal your stuff, and end up in jail. Mm-hmm. Which one is it? Which one is more palatable?
And I did see those statistics going back some time ago in relation to single-parent families and broken homes in the United States and the amount of people who end up in a penitentiary. And the statistics are very high and they can't be refuted. I'm not suggesting, by the way, that all single parents do a bad job, because they don't. There's some really great single parents out there. But the fact is, you're really behind the curb when you're on your own trying to raise children. It's difficult.
Yeah, exactly right. The way I describe it to people is a smoking analogy. Just because you smoke doesn't mean you'll get cancer. But by smoking, you increase the chances of getting cancer, mm-hmm. right? So the single parent home increases the chances of your children facing suicide, failing out of school, ending up incarcerated. The list goes on, right? That is the number one predictor for these types of outcomes for kids.
So how do we? How do we fix that? Because to get to the root of that, we have to find out why parents are splitting up, why they're divorcing. You know, why they're not staying together, why marriage has become disposable and relationships have become disposable, because that's the foundation for that, isn't it?
Yes. And to kind of simplify it, I think we've become far too much of an individualistic society, or at least have a culture of individualism to the detriment of our children. We don't like to sacrifice as much as we say we do. And there's an ego that we carry about ourselves. Right. We like to say that we're good parents, but we don't like to act like good parents. We want to do the thing that we want to do and carry along our children. You hear phrases like, if I'm happy, my child will be happy, which is a nonsense statement. Right? Because your children's happiness isn't based on yours.
No.
So, you know, there's definitely a cultural aspect where we've allowed the parents to skate away with being bad parents. And then the children who grew up in those circumstances have Stockholm Syndrome and never say anything negative about the choices of their parents.
But we talked about it the other night on the radio. We were talking about the fact that society has changed so much now that 30 years ago you needed one income to provide for a family, to get your mortgage, to get your food, to pay your bills. Now you need two parents working to do the same thing because the cost of living has gone so high and we've become more materialistic. We've more bills to pay because we've got internet, Netflix and all sorts of things going on in our lives. So how do we get back to 40 years ago, but with a modern twist? Isn't that what we need to do? So there's always a parent there for the child at home to collect them from school, to be there to help them with their homework, you know, and to be there for them. That was so valuable.
You're absolutely right. I do think that there is an element of choice to have luxury. You know, I think years ago, the idea of having to live in the best place, having to go to the best schools, having the best of everything, what we perceive as being the best, comes with a cost, right? The cost is our time. That means that you have to work more. That means you have to earn more. So obviously, there are things that are happening economically that are outside of our control. But having two parents in the household is incredibly valuable. You know, when we were struggling economically, we ended up homeless. You know, my father wasn't there to help us out. We had one income. So, you know, we ended up homeless twice when I was a kid. That if he was around, we wouldn't have had that situation at the very least.
Did that create, like, so, just from your experience, because obviously I haven't had that experience, mm-hmm. but that experience of becoming homeless, you know, as a child with your mom and your siblings, did that create an insecurity then? Does that create an insecurity in children, you know, growing later in life, that kind of insecurity of always them wanting a home?
Yes. So much so, if I'm completely honest, like the idea of having one place to live is a foreign idea to me. It's not until just like recently where I've lived in a place for probably like 3 years in a row, which is a long time for me. In my 20s, I was moving every year, right? So being unsure about where home is or what a home looks like was always part of my life, as much as I hated moving. it's a weird situation.
Well, look, unfortunately, I've run out of time and I could spend much longer talking to you. And maybe we could do it again for a longer period of time, Adam, because it's been a really interesting conversation. I recommend people go and have a look at your books. They're amazing. The Black Victim to Black Victor is certainly a wonderful book. And I know your new book is due out, which is called The Children We Left Behind, How Western Culture Rationalizes Family Separation and Ignores the Pain of Child Neglect. When is that book out, by the way?
It's actually just went on pre-order. You can do the pre-order on Amazon. It should be hitting bookstores and everywhere else very soon. But yeah, April 1st is the official date.
It sounds like a really interesting book. Maybe we'll grab you back on to talk a little bit more about it when it comes out on April the 1st. Listen, thank you very much indeed, Adam, for joining me. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I really appreciate it. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
There you go. Adam B. Coleman, you can check his books out online on Amazon. They are available, Black Victim to Black Victor, and also The Children We Left Behind, How Western Culture Rationalizes Family Separation and Ignores the Pain of Child Neglect, which is true, by the way. We need to care more about our kids. We need to get to the root of the problem, because he's right in what he says. What he said simply is, and this is not having a pop at single parents before single parents turn around and go, you're not having a pop at us. We're not. There's some wonderful single parents out there, some great single parents whose kids have done really, really well because they've worked so hard. But sadly, as a single parent, through separation, to circumstance, to the father not being around after the child was born, and I'm blaming men for this as well, by the way, it's an uphill battle. It's tough. And statistically, and the statistics don't lie, your child is more likely to end up in a bad situation. That doesn't mean they'll end up in a bad situation, but more likely to. So we need to find out how we end up in that situation. Why are relationships breaking down so easily, so quickly, more so than they ever did before? Why are people getting divorced and separated more than they ever did before? Have relationships become disposable? Because, sadly, the victims of those disposable relationships are children whose lives are messed up by all of that. Anyway, it's a whole conversation we can have another time. Thank you very much indeed. I should be back again with you on Monday at 9 o'clock. Enda Murphy is on the way with some great love songs. Until then, have a wonderful evening and tuck in. It's nice and cold.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
McCarthy Insurance Group, serving the community for over 70 years. For home, farm, motor, life, health and business insurance, log on to mig.ie or free phone 1800 50 11 11. Probably your best call in 2024. Charles McCarthy Insurance is trading as McCarthy Insurance Group is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.